Chapter 10. Gorm didn't realize how much he'd missed Andoran until he heard the familiar clank of its cobbles beneath his iron-toed boots, the smell of the street carts roasting meats with exotic spices, the alleys and shop fronts ringing with the calls of merchants hawking their wares, vibrantly colored posters plastered every surface at eye level, advertising anything from mummers' plays to the latest in enchanted armor. Andoran held innumerable delights for one and all, provided you could afford them. It didn't take long, however, for Gorm to remember that he could barely afford a beef roll in the city, and so his mood had soured by the time he arrived at the meeting place. The rest of the party was doing their best to inconspicuously loiter near the gatehouse of a large compound amid the derelict homes and tiny shops of Dunedling Fens. Several large warehouses loomed beyond the black iron fence. Haraldin jabbed a thumb over his shoulder as the dwarf stamped up. "Are you sure this is the place?"
"Aye, this is Boomer and Buster's company."
"This place?" said Laruna. "This industrial complex?"
"That's so hard to believe?" asked Gorm.
"Yes," said Jin.
Katha scratched her chin.
"It just looks very legitimate."
"So?"
Gorm was starting to feel defensive.
"Most of your contacts that I've encountered have had more, shall we say, legally ambiguous backgrounds," Haraldin said.
"Yourself included, given all the thieving," Gorm countered.
"You wound me, friend."
Haraldin leaned in close to whisper harshly,
"And if the wrong people hear you talking that way, Benny Hookhand will do so as well. So let's keep quiet about our pasts, eh?"
"Fine by me," Gorm shrugged. "Ye were the ones who brought it up."
"I only meant to point out that these contacts defy the trend," said Haraldin.
"Aye, Boomer and Buster do that a lot," said Gorm. "Let's go."
The gate featured a large brass plaque embossed with elaborate lettering. It read, "Creative Destruction Incorporated, established 7-344.
"I think you've been expecting us," Gorm said to the gatehouse guard. "We sent word ahead."
The guard, a balding halfling with heavy-lidded eyes, tapped an enchanted orb without ever looking up from his book. The gate swung open as though blown by an otherwise undetectable wind. They thanked the guard to no effect and made their way along a brick path to the main warehouse of Creative Destruction Incorporated. A doorman ushered them into a small lobby where a loud shout greeted them.
"Gorm Ingerson!" Boomer hollered.
The old Scribkin striding toward them was almost as stocky as the dwarf. He wore an elaborate set of goggles and a thick white mustache so long it had to be tucked into his leather apron. Every inch of his visible skin was covered in runic tattoos. He stomped over to Gorm and shook his hand with a hearty slap to the shoulder.
"Good to see you."
"Ye as well, Boomer,"
said Gorm, before introducing the rest of the party.
"A pleasure, a pleasure."
Boomer shook each adventurer's hand in turn.
"Oh, I could tell you stories about this dwarf, and I guarantee they're all at least half true. Ha! Now come on. Buster will be eager to see you, but I can sneak in a quick tour on the way."
The Scribkin led them past the receptionist's desk, through a pair of oak doors, and into a jungle of steel and stone. Pipes and steel beams thrust up from every inch of the floor, towering all the way to the distant ceiling. Workers in white coveralls scurried through a thick canopy of walkways and rope bridges, congregating at workstations illuminated by floating sorcerous lights. The air hummed with the sounds of industry and magic, whistling steam, clanging tools, hissing sorcery, and an isolated scream from a careless employee. Gorm noted a pair of gremlins packing sword after sword into an impossibly small bag no bigger than his rucksack. A tinderkin in a white coat took a swig of a purple potion and faded from Gorm's vision, only to reappear a moment later to the disappointment of her colleagues. A duero blasted down a narrow track on some sort of iron sled, propelled by a massive flame erupting from the contraption's rear.
"Bloody bones, what was that?"
Gorm yelled, watching the stout gnome rocket away.
"A flame jet-propelled mechanical steed, or a jet steed, as we say," said Boomer. "Gonna be huge. Everyone will be riding jet steeds."
There was a distant crash followed by a siren ringing.
"Once we figure out how to stop them safely," added the Scribkin. "Seems like madness to me," said Gorm.
Maybe so, but people were wary of fire pots and grappling cannons back in the day, and now they're standard adventuring gear. That's the nature of progress, and at Creative Destruction, scientific progress is what we're all about, Boomer declared, as he led the party along a bright yellow path painted on the floor. We use the very latest in wizardry and advanced technology to help enterprising heroes the world over decimate their enemies. And your facility, apparently, said Jin, nodding to a pile of rubble attended by a squad of Duero and coveralls. The bearded gnomes combed through the debris with strange devices, and one extracted a thin silver rod from a pile of concrete. Ah, that'd be the souvenir wind chimes, said Boomer.
Really? Asked Katha.
Boomer shrugged. We made them to conjure their own wind, but then the breeze they make sets them off and conjures more wind. Soon enough you've got a nasty chain reaction, and they go from a gentle gust to a hurricane in seconds. But we're learning from the experience, and we'll do better next time. Or bones, maybe we can weaponize them. That'd make some money. Ha! It's all progress at Creative Destruction. Why, look over here. The gnome pointed to a thick glass window. On the other side of it was a small room, its walls and floor painted white. The occupants of the room were presumably gnomes of one clan or another, but they were all wrapped head to toe in baggy white linens and thick goggles. They gathered around a small stone archway with a purplish-green crystal at the top. As the heroes watched, one of the gnomish attendants traced a small rune on the arch with a gloved hand. The tiny portal flared with blue light, and a moment later another gnome in white came into view through the archway, like a window to somewhere else.
Waygates, breathed Laruna.
Yes, indeed, laughed Boomer. That's our facility in Knifevale that they're passing fruit to. Ha! We're going to revolutionize travel and shipping.
The attendants in white were gently nudging apples through the way gate with the sort of caution that monster handlers might use when feeding flame drakes. Three or four apples made it through before the crystal on top of the arch cracked. Gnomes dove for cover in all directions as the portal winked out of existence.
Once we work out a couple of small problems, said Boomer, deflated.
Having your door randomly disappear seems to be a big one.
Gorm watched the gnomes in white stand again and cautiously approached the waygate.
Oh, it's not random, said Boomer. Each hunk of thaumite can only pass so much matter through a portal before it starts to crack. We think we could get a lot more out of each crystal if we calibrate the thaumite setting better, but it's an exacting science.
Isn't thaumite really expensive? Asked Laruna.
That's the other problem. Moving a handful of apples costs a few thousand gilton.
Boomer nodded his head as they continued along the pathway.
Until we figure out those calibrations or get the price of thaumite down, we can't mass-produce the waygates. But we'll get there. Progress marches on. Speaking of which, mind the path, son.
Jin stepped back onto the yellow paint just as a crackling blue battle axe flew through the space that his head had occupied a split second earlier. It sailed through a large rectangular hole in a corrugated metal wall before landing with an inexplicable splash.
Close one! Ha! Got to stay on the yellow floor when we're in a live test zone, said Boomer. Safety is our top priority. Or at least it's in the top five.
What kind of test could that possibly be?
Laruna snarled as she tried to calm the trembling Noctomancer.
Oh, I'm glad you asked.
Boomer's eyes flashed as a wide grin lifted his impressive mustache.
Let me show you. Very exciting stuff.
He opened a door in the wall with the axe hole and led them into a brightly lit white chamber. A raised platform dominated the room, its surface a grate of tiny holes. On the far wall opposite the hole, the electrified battle axe was embedded into a massive wooden target painted with a red bullseye. Beneath the raised platform, a wide, shallow basin rested on short stilts, with a bottom that sloped down to a metal spigot. A tinderkin in a white coat opened the spigot, and thick slime poured into the glass beakers she held beneath it. The source of the slime was obvious. On top of the grate, a tower of translucent jelly gently quivered. It was shaped like a large cube, albeit one that leaned sharply to one side. Boomer gestured at the slime in the manner of a carnival barker unveiling a bearded woman or a shaved dwarf.
That, my friends, is a viscous rhombohedron.
A what? Asked Heraldin.
Viscous rhombohedron. It's a type of dungeon slime, said Gorm, recalling his earliest dungeon crawls. Slides around hallways eating anything that gets stuck in it. Same family as spherical jellies and gooey cylinders.
Viscous rhombos are the worst, though, said Kaifa. When they get hit, they spray some of their acidic slime in all directions. It's got to be one of the world's most disgusting defense mechanisms.
Ha! Exactly! Boomer clapped his hands. But what we discovered is that the total volume of slime released by a viscous rhombohedron is directly correlated to the amount of destructive force that impacts its outer membrane.
Jin had recovered enough from his near miss to be impressed.
That's rather marvelous.
It is? Asked Gorm.
They've developed an absolute scale for the damage inflicted by weapons and spells.
The Noctomancer dabbed at his brow with a cloth.
They can measure which weapons are better.
Exactly, said Boomer. Melis, what did you get?
10.5 pints, sir,
called the technician, dumping the last vial of slime into a large bucket.
A good hit, then.
Boomer's grin was even wider when he turned back to Gorm's party.
Our battle axe of the Northern Storm always does between 5 and 12 pints of damage. An axe of lightning from those buffoons over at Vorpal Corp only does between 4 and 11.
Can't see how that'd make much difference, said Gorm. An axe through the skull will kill you either way.
Ah, but some skulls are thicker than others, said Malice,
carrying the bucket up a stepladder. When she reached the top, she poured the slime onto the viscous rhombohedron, which burbled happily as it reabsorbed its lost material.
Ha! Ingerson here is living proof, said Boomer. And I don't just mean hacking through a swamp crocken's carapace. Listen, Gorm, heroes and their backers will pay sacks of gilton to know that they've got the best gear around. We can charge 4 times as much for a weapon that does just 2 pints of damage more.
But the system must be a little biased, mused Jin. I mean, slimes are immune to venom, and I'd imagine they're more vulnerable to lightning than fire.
Ah, see, now you're sounding like Buster.
Boomer waved a gloved hand dismissively. He's trying to breed specialized slimes so he can figure out the math for different kinds of damage. It overcomplicates the system.
It makes it more accurate, you mean?
Hollered a gulping, raspy voice. All of the heroes except Gorm started as a gremlin stepped into the room. The Agekeepers held that the gremlins were once the gnomes of Clan Remlin, known for their rigorous science and lax ethics. Like the other lost clans of gnomes, the corrupted god Noros warped their forms in the years before the War of Betrayal. Yet while Menon's evil engineers had clearly made the slaw distinctly frog-like and the gnolls look like canines, it was much less certain where the forces of darkness had drawn inspiration from for the gremlins. They usually had features somewhere between feline and reptile, and often they were marked by brightly colored scales, but those weren't guaranteed traits. Gremlins often had a keen interest in biomancy, but unfortunately, their culture observed ethical standards in the way that merfolk observe hiking. As such, no two gremlins were ever very similar. If they were, a couple of quick mutations could fix that. Buster was bulkier than most gremlins Gorm had encountered, half a head shorter than Boomer, but built like a barrel. He wore heavy gloves over his arms and a pair of gold-rimmed spectacles in front of amber reptilian eyes. A thick, prehensile tail extended from behind his leather apron, gripping a large spanner that he waved for emphasis as he shouted at Boomer.
If we don't account for natural resistances, our scale will never produce reliable results, the gremlin said.
Bah, you'll just make it so confusing the customers won't pay attention, Boomer shouted back.
Buster's hackles were up. Gorm noted that they were webbed and tipped with sharp-looking spines these days.
It's not as confusing as a system skewed by...
It's good to see you, Buster, said Gorm.
The gremlin stopped mid-shout, adjusted his spectacles, and blinked at the assembled heroes.
Gorm Ingerson, how long has it been? A dragon's age, I'd say.
He broke into a sharp-fanged grin.
Oh, I wish I'd known you'd be visiting.
I told you he was coming this morning, said Boomer.
Oh, who listens to you anyway?
Buster brushed the Scribkin aside.
Come now, Gorm, you and your friends must come back to the office for tea.
That sounds lovely, said Katha.
Aye, thank you, said Gorm.
And after we've caught up, you can tell us about this favor you need.
Buster guided Gorm back out of the test chamber.
I didn't mention a favor, said Gorm.
Yet,
said Buster.
When Gorm Ingerson shows up in Andoran, he needs a favor from someone, said Boomer. Lucky for us that it's our turn, ha! And probably unlucky for you all, as he only comes to us when he's in really big trouble.
That, or he's attempting an insane stunt, said Buster.
Ha! Right, laughed Boomer. So which is it this time, Ingerson? You in danger, or just planning something crazy?
Gorm gave a grim smile.
Well, since you lads brought it up, both.
Both?
Buster removed his spectacles.
I'll wait till you're sitting down, said Gorm. This is a big one.
I think it's shock,
Thane muttered.
It's not shock, said Bert, his head in his paws.
It looks like it.
Thane's face bunched up in concern as he stared down at the clerk.
Madam, I believe you're having a physiological reaction. She's not. It's not shock.
Bert sighed and tried to get more comfortable on the troll's massive shoulder.
She's got all the signs.
The troll watched the woman pensively.
Vacant stare, frozen in place, pale complexion.
The desk clerk made a sound that might have been a disgusted grunt or the dislodging of some stubborn phlegm. It was the second such sound she made during the visit, the first uttered when Thane handed over his thick stack of forms and questionnaires. Otherwise, she had remained as silent and flavorless as a lump of human oatmeal, decorated with excessive makeup and a wispy blonde wig ill-balanced on top of her malformed head. Her mouth was set in a frog-like frown as she hunched over Thane's NPC application.
That's how they always are, hissed Bert. If there were more clerks here, they'd be acting exactly the same.
Yet there was only the one. The Office of NPC Relations at Tamanthan Square was otherwise empty. There were few Shadowkin, NPC or otherwise, willing to walk into any office of the Heroes Guild these days, and management responded by cutting staff. Bert suspected that the remaining clerk kept her spot by distinguishing herself as the most dour and unhelpful of the pack.
What is she doing?
Thane muttered through his teeth.
She's trying to find a reason to send you to the back of the line, Bert whispered. What line? You'd think that would matter, wouldn't you?
Bert stared down at the tiny clerk. He'd spent much of his time in the Elven Embassy helping his clanmates get their papers and had seen every imaginable problem that clerks could find in NPC applications. Though it had been years since those days, he'd still navigated Thane's questionnaire and its writers with the deft touch of a sailor maneuvering through familiar straits. Form D4, including his voucher of intent to find employment, was completed in triplicate. Form D6 itemized his attributes, from species and height down to an inventory of applicable combat skills. Subsection D20 cataloged all the troll's treasures, including those carried on his person, in neat loot tables. Thane's application was flawless.
I still think it might be a physiological reaction, said Thane, a note of panic rising in his voice. I've been causing them all day.
Bert gritted his teeth to hold back an angry retort. He took a couple of measured breaths and said,
Those people froze up because you kept trying to skulk and lurk in the shadows instead of walking down the street like a normal person. You look like a thrice-cursed mugger. You got to act like you belong here if you don't want people to notice you. I'm not sure I do belong here. Do you even know what you're saying?
Bert had never heard of a one-ton walking death machine being so insecure about anything.
If you don't belong here, I don't belong here. None of us Shadowkin do, let alone the monsters.
Bert's perch rose and fell as Thane shrugged, clearly uncomfortable.
It's just, I've never been in a city of, you know, a lightling city,
spat Bert.
Yeah, I bet you haven't. And neither have I, because Andoran ain't the lightling's city. It's everybody's. Kobolds and orcs and more have been born here, grew up here, and made homes here. It's ours as much as anyone's. If we keep shuffling around the edges and apologizing for being too much trouble and all that nonsense, it won't be our city much longer. It'll just be the place we live. But I don't want to hear any excuses. I lived here for most of my life, Troll. You know how many hoops I jumped through to get here? Hundreds. And I mean literally. It's one of the tricks the elves used to like a kobold to know.
Bert could feel his hackles rising as he continued.
Andoran is my city. Our city. And as long as you act like it, everyone else will too.
Thane stared at the kobold on his shoulder long and hard.
All right, he said slowly. I'm sorry. Good, said Bert. Stop apologizing. Yes. Okay.
Silence settled back over the hall. Eventually, the clerk lurched into motion, setting the paper down and retrieving a pair of rubber stamps from her drawer.
Never seen a troll NPC before, she croaked in the voice of a longtime pipeweed enthusiast.
Doesn't matter, does it?
Barked Bert.
There's a manticore over in Sculpin Down that works in a foundry, and I know a bog lurk that got a job in a city sewer.
Just saying I ain't seen one, said the clerk, without so much as looking at Bert. Speaking of which, I ain't seen your papers either.
Oh, don't you worry. I'm an NPC, said Bert, flashing his own booklet at her.
If the clerk had bothered to take down Bert's NPC number and look up his records, she would have found that his non-combatant papers were voided for associating with a band of violent criminals. But few people had been eager to climb up a troll to check a kobold's documents. Bert was counting on it. The clerk just nodded.
So you're the sponsor?
Bert shook his head. Shadowkin sponsoring Shadowkin required a background check. It was much easier to procure a lightling's help, especially a particular sort of lightling.
We have a friend here to sponsor him, the kobold told the clerk. Hey, Boggit, you're up!
A pile of rags on a nearby bench shifted and dropped to the floor. A moment later, a mop of unkempt hair popped from the top of it, and the creature shuffled in a widely meandering path up to the desk next to Thane. A bulbous face with a red glow and glazed eyes pushed out of the hairy mess, wearing an oblivious grin. The features could have been those of a halfling or a scribkin or even a duero, but there was too much beard and grime concealing them to say for certain.
I'm here to vouch for this kobold's character, said Boggit.
Not me, whispered Bert. The troll!
And the troll, slurred Boggit. Both stand-up gentlemen if I ever saw them.
The clerk's face didn't even twitch as she turned to the drunk.
You hereby certify that this troll is of sound moral character and able to join the Freedlands as a productive member of society and agree to sponsor him as an NPC,
croaked the clerk eventually.
Righty-o, said Boggit.
Shine here,
sighed the clerk, presenting a form. Boggit scrawled his name and birthdate on the form with the provided quill, drew an X through the signature line, and saluted for good measure.
Pleasure to serve. Are we done?
That's everything. Thanks, friend.
Bert pulled a small glass bottle of dwarven whiskey from his pouch and tossed it down to the probable gnome. The vial landed somewhere in Boggit's rags and disappeared from sight as the old drunk shuffled away.
That's it?
Asked Thane.
That's it, said Bert. Now we just find out if your application is approved.
The clerk made the grunting noise again, stamped the application, and rang a small bell. Another clerk came and ushered Thane into a small back room, where a gnomish craftsman, a deep gnome judging by the purplish hue of his skin, started working on the troll's woodcut portrait.
This is a good sign, right?
The troll whispered from the corner of his mouth as the artist worked.
Oh yeah, said Bert, you're golden. I thought they'd need more time to look into my background, said Thane. I mean, she saw who vouched for me. How do they know I won't commit a crime?
The deep gnome laughed at the question.
Buddy, if you try anything, they've got a physical description of you, a complete threat assessment, and a catalog of the loot a group of professional heroes will find on your corpse, said Bert. You go rogue, and you'll be nothing but a revenue stream for them to cash in.
That's what the Heroes Guild is supposed to do, said Boomer. They get paid to take care of this sort of mess.
And I'd be happy to let them if they'd treat it proper, said Gorm. But I don't see anyone else trying to muster Arth's great artifacts.
Do they realize the Lich might have the crown of Iron Thorns? Asked Buster.
They might, said Jin. They know it's missing, and there aren't too many active villains right now capable of taking it.
The question is whether or not they'd do anything about it, said Laruna.
Besides adjusting some numbers and upping their fees, added Gorm.
Boomer and Buster nodded, and a thoughtful silence descended once more.
Gorm looked around the conference table, which sat in one half of the office of Boomer J. Blorfindel and Buster Sline. On the other side of the room, two desks were set opposite each other, one as neat and tidy as a grid, the other barely visible beneath an avalanche of paperwork and discarded food wrappers. Beyond the desks, a giant window overlooked the factory floor of Creative Destruction Incorporated's main workshop. Plans and diagrams were plastered across the walls so thickly that they almost concealed the certificates and commemorative plaques that lay underneath them.
"This is a big one," said Boomer, twirling his mustache. "If we thought there was any plan with a chance of working that didn't involve us breaking into the Museum of Andoran, we'd do that instead," said Gorm.
"The world hasn't faced anything like this since the Sixth Age," said Caitha, "but the Guild is treating it like a standard kill-and-loot quest. It may be too late by the time they realize what they're up against."
Boomer nodded.
"That sounds a lot like our Heroes Guild, unfortunately."
"But this plan..."
Buster picked at his fangs with his claws.
Gorm leaned forward in his seat.
"You help us steal the staff, and your debt to me is repaid."
"Poppycock," snapped Boomer. "We can never repay what we owe you, Ingerson."
The gremlin smiled at the tattooed Scribkin.
"But that won't stop us from trying. I just wish you'd given us more time," he added to Gorm.
The dwarf snorted.
"Well, we can come back tomorrow if in you need..."
"No, you can't," interrupted Boomer. "You need to steal the Wormwood Staff of Geffen today, because the Omnomancy exhibit ends tonight."
"What's that now?" said Jin.
"You didn't know," Buster said, somewhat surprised. "They're putting the Omnomancy relics back into Guild storage and opening up an exhibit on the reptilian peoples. The museum announced they'd be ending the Omnomancy display after King Clan of Ruskin announced the quest to slay Dratar Ermion again," said Buster. "I imagine the Guild is nervous about having so many of its relics out of the vaults when so many heroes are headed far afield."
"But you can still find a way for us to get the staff, right?" said Gorm, trying to ignore the icy fingers of panic creeping into his chest.
Boomer turned to Buster.
"You thinking what I'm thinking?"
"Temporal distortion ruse?" suggested the gremlin.
"Seems the simplest way," said the Scribkin.
"It's the only way given the constraints," said Buster.
"We'll do it," said Gorm. "Just tell us what it is we're doing."
"Pulling off an impossible heist, I'd say." Boomer wore an eager grin. "But there's no time to waste sitting around here jabbering about it."
"Come," said Buster. "We'll explain down in the lab."
They led the heroes back down onto the factory floor and along the narrow yellow path to a door with a copper plaque on the front that read Consumables. The door opened into a warehouse of mismatched oddities. There were racks with hundreds of vials of colorful liquids with labels like Resist Fire, Breathe Water, Detect Gold, and every other imaginable pairing of verbs and elements. A multitude of bombs and grenades lined another set of shelves. An entire wall was dedicated to charms and cantrips, each ready to unleash a small spell once broken open. Heraldin plucked a folded sheet of paper from a stack on the cantrip shelf next to a sign that read, Anti-Magic Charms. He was about to unfold it when Geist lunged forward and grabbed the bard's wrist hard enough to elicit a surprised yelp.
"What was that for?" asked Heraldin. "I just wanted to read the pamphlet on their anti-magic charms."
"Your big friend there has the right of it," said Buster,
carefully removing the paper from the bard's hand.
"The rune on that paper is the charm. Anyone reads it, and it'll knock the sorcery off everything within 50 yards, for a couple of minutes at least."
"Sounds handy," said Gorm.
"Handy? Those runes will take the magic out of a mage, unshift a shapeshifter's shape, and strip the bite off any magic weapons," said Boomer. "They'll change the tide of your fortunes, they will. Take a couple."
"Thank you."
Heraldin slipped a few of the folded papers into one of his pouches.
"Just don't read them anywhere near our shop."
"Ha!" said Boomer.
"But those runes won't help you get a Stenish artifact out of the Museum of Andoran."
"No," said Laruna.
I'd think we could knock out the security wards to get into the museum at night.
You might knock down the magical wards, said Buster, but you'd still have to walk into a museum full of guards unnoticed if you're going to even make it to the staff.
Let alone walk out, agreed Boomer. If anything's out of place for a second, they'll be all over you like slaw on a swamp log.
So what's your plan? Asked Gorm.
Boomer tapped the side of his nose. Make sure nothing's out of place for a second.
I don't follow, said Heraldin. The Scribkin took a key from his pocket and unlocked a glass cabinet. Carefully, he retrieved a device that looked like a copper cage built around several small blue crystals suspended by some unseen force.
This, he said reverently, is the Chrona Bomb.
You mean the Time Bomb, said Buster.
That would be a bomb that goes off after a set amount of time, growled Boomer.
You mean a delayed explosion bomb? Said the gremlin.
You know that's... Boomer caught himself and, after a deep breath, told Buster, we aren't going through the name again. It's a device that stops time.
Buster adjusted his spectacles.
More accurately, everything inside a small area around the Chrona Bomb will be sped up so much that...
So much that time stops for everyone else, said Boomer, glaring a warning at the gremlin.
Isn't chronomancy illegal? Asked Laruna.
Not as illegal as robbing a museum, said Buster.
Right. You can get permits and academy exemptions for chronomancy, said Boomer.
Which we did, said Buster. Our research initially focused on developing a way to speed up production.
Imagine it, said Boomer, throwing one arm around Gorm and waving the other at some unseen production line. Hundreds of golems working faster than we can even see. Why, we'd manufacture cartloads in less than a second.
Well, we would if the crystalline structure supporting the temporal distortion field could withstand the distortion itself, said Buster.
Beg pardon, said Heraldin.
Those crystals are old, rare, and expensive enough to make thaumite look like quartz, said Boomer. And once you set off the Chrona Bomb, they start to weaken. There's no telling how long they'll hold out before they shatter, dissipating the time spell completely.
But it won't be more than a few minutes, added Buster.
Gorm looked at the Chrona Bomb and gave a snort of grudging appreciation.
That looks good, but I still don't see how this gets us the Wormwood staff.
Have some vision, Gorm, laughed Boomer. You're going to buy your tickets, go into the museum, and get several minutes uninterrupted with the staff's display case. Anything you do will happen too fast for anyone to see. You'll grab the staff, and nobody's going to look twice.